Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Walls in Our Minds. Terry, are you live? Red?
I'm here.
Very, very good. I think we're having Blog Talk Radio problems this evening. Shows that Terry is there and live, but I'm not sure he's there. How are you, Red?
Well, I'll tell you, I've had a big, big day, and it turned out better than I thought it was. I was on Alex Jones' show today, and we were just, floating along real well, and then all of a sudden, they brought it to his attention that the stock market was in a free fall. So needless to say, our program and what we had planned to discuss went down the tube, and I ended up spending almost 2 hours, I think, on there instead of an hour, and it was pretty exciting because nobody really knew what was happening and why, and of course right-wing conspiracy people, why we think the worst, of course. And of course, I still recommend that everybody out there be prepared for the worst. This might have been just a little trial run. I think it was rigged. I don't think it was. I don't think it was just an accident. I think it was rigged. I just question everything that happens because they just don't tell the truth, and you better not start believing what they're saying, because you're going to get in a trap if you do.
For those of us who haven't caught up with the word today, could you tell us briefly what happened?
Well, they say that somebody made a mistake having to do with some Procter & Gamble stock or whatever, and it had an immediate effect on the big board, and they lost, the Dow Jones lost about 1,000 points in 15 minutes or less.
Oh.
You hadn't heard that?
No, I hadn't. I've been out all day. In 15 minutes or less, and then what happened? Did they?
They brought it back up. Whether they pumped it up or whatever with a bunch of taxpayers' money or something, but it was it closed out at 3-something down. I don't remember exactly now, but it was a wild, wild time on the stock exchange. And of course, I was there on the show, and I told them, I said, why don't you try to get a hold of Bob Chapman or Gerald Celente and get them on right quick, because they would be much better informed on these kind of things than I. But they said no. Alex said no. We're gonna keep you, and they've got Bob Chapman for tomorrow, and so it'll be interesting to listen to what he has to say tomorrow. Everybody will have had time to analyze this thing, but never before in history, never has the Dow Jones lost that fast, that much in such a short time. It was a free fall, and you see, there was supposed to be, I forget what they call it, but they've got a kind of a safety net there. If it drops off 400 to 500 points, I think it is, they're supposed to shut trading off. But the fact that they didn't tells us that, you know, they were totally unprepared for something like this, or it was intentional, one of the two. And as time goes on, the truth usually comes out, and so you know, I'm smiling, but it was tiring. It takes a toll because a person is trying their best to think and think through this thing, and of course Alex he knows about the bankers and what they're doing and all of this, and he has it down pretty pat, because he has some guests on there that are very well informed. And I was listening to him, of course, and he was just, there was seconds there where it was going down like 20 points in just a 5 seconds or so, and another 20 points, and he was counting it down as it went.
Whoa.
And so he is very curious, wondering how we the people are going to handle this situation, because it will be in our ballpark. We the people, we're the ones that are going to have to straighten out this mess in the end. And we're gonna see some interesting things happen. And one of the things that I brought out was how that, you see, they were having riots all over Greece today.
Yes, I know that.
Because of all this. And the people in Greece are saying, hey, no more bailouts for the bankers. The bankers got them into this trouble. And the bankers think that the people are going to pay the bill. That's what it really boils down to. And, of course, in this country, we have to hope that the productive people in this nation come to a point where they say no more for the bankers, no more bailouts, no more, more debt, drawing interest and right out of our pockets. And of course, it was coming out. They said, "Oh, they're gonna take people's retirement money. They're gonna try to plug the hole in the economy with people's retirement money." Now, that's getting pretty low when they are going to get have the anger of an awful lot of people to deal with. And so it's the kind of a scenario that a lot of us have anticipated happening. I think it's a kind of a dry run in a way. I think it's staged, choreographed, or whatever you want to call it. They've done this. I think it was all, and of course it may have gotten out of, they probably had it staged, but it probably got away from them. and a high probability there that it got away from them. And you see, if they could have driven the stock market down over the day here, down 300 or 400 points, there would be a lot of little people that lose a lot of money. Their 401ks and such would take a beating, and then of course the elite would be back in the market in the morning or after hours and picking up all that cheap stock, and they'd run it back up again. You know, how many times have we seen them do this? Where they run it down and they sell short and all those nasty little tricks that the elite have. You know, I don't understand all of them, and I don't ever intend to spend enough time trying to figure it out. I just know that they're evil people, and their days are numbered. I'm confident of that. I think that the unrest, the economy is going south worldwide. It's not just here in the United States. It's not just in Europe. It's going to affect the entire planet. And these scoundrels that have promoted all this globalism, look what globalism is about to do to the people on this globe. If they hadn't promoted this globalism for all these years, these last 30, 40 years, some countries would have been able to continue and to prosper and to more or less immunize themselves from the mistakes of other countries. Now, they say that if Greece goes under, Portugal will be the next one, and then Spain, and it'll be a chain reaction over there in Europe. Of course, the EU was taking a licking today. It was dropping like a rock, too. Gold went over 2,100, or it went to 2,200. And silver, I guess, for a while at least, was up over 19, I think. Anyway, it was a day I won't forget so quick.
Wow. Thank you very much. And I think your co-host has made it on the line here. Is that right?
Yeah, he should be able to give us a better picture.
Is this Walls in our mind?
No, this is... Good evening, Terry. Thank you for making it, and we just went right into conversation without starting off with a prayer. So I'm hoping you'll get us back on track.
I would love to open us with a prayer, and thank you for covering for me, Kate.
You're welcome.
You know what kind of computer issues I had going on here, and I'm just thankful that I have such good people to cover. Let's pray together. Almighty Father God, we come to you quite humble, and I want to start out by thanking you, Father, for showing us and revealing so much truth around us, helping us to see what's really going on. But, Father, it's a scary thing to see all of the corruption that's going on in this world right now, the subversion that's going on, and when you reveal it in the way that you are, it's a little bit overwhelming, so I pray that those that have a forgiving heart, that are blessed with your spirit, that are able to seek the truth clearly, I pray that you also kind of calm some of our anxious hearts. And I pray that for all of our listeners that are worried and concerned out there, because there's a lot going on. A lot of things seem to be at the brink. Today's glitch in the stock market, Father, demonstrates how vulnerable our economy is. I pray for your strength and courage for those that see and are witnessing the tremendous subversion that's going on in the world and in our country and even in each of our states. I'm thankful for my friends, Red and Kate, and I just really thankful for the listeners that we have that come and listen every week and seeking truth And I pray, Father, as I always do, that your spirit guide us and you go before us in everything that we say and we do. And if there's something that we are saying that's not on track, that is not true, I pray that you would shut us down, that you would have us bite our tongues. And conversely, I pray, Father, that as we speak the truth here on walls and our minds, that we are heard and we are believed and trusted, because I know that our hearts are, our intent is good. And I just pray that you guide us and keep us on track and show us the way. But we want the people to hear and to understand and to know the truth. Father, thank you so much for your Son. In his name we pray. Amen.
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 Wow. What a day. What a week.
Were you listening to Alex Jones when this all happened?
No, I was tied up in a closing that got protracted. I wasn't even able to get to a computer.
Anyway, it was such a switch, and to have it happen right in the middle of a thing like that, totally unplanned, totally Alex didn't know it was coming, and a sure thing I didn't know this was coming, and I felt totally inadequate to make any kind of a contribution. But I think that the good Lord kind of prompted, some of the things that I came to mind. I was thrilled, really, because of course, Alex, he hears all the stories. So he'll have Bob Chapman on tomorrow, and he's had Gerald Salenti and Ron Paul and all these people that are much more experts than I, and so he gets the whole picture. I brought out how that the Constitution, and this is something that we have to get across to the Tea Party people. We've got people that are studying the Constitution. I don't really approve of how they are going about it, because I think that they're getting more confused by some of the teachers that are teaching this stuff, because I think that we're at a point in our history where we just cannot, we haven't got the time to invest in a very detailed study of the Constitution and what it is supposed to do. And I think we've got to do everything we can to communicate with these people that are just, they're just waking up. They're rubbing the sleep out of their eyes, and all of a sudden they're wondering, how do we get a handle on what the Constitution really says? They've heard a lot about it, but they know really nothing about it. And I would like to see the people that are teaching this start with the very beginning and the intent. The intent of the law is what you have to understand. And if we can get people to understand that the intent of that Constitution is to control government, and everybody knows it's not being controlled by the Constitution today, and everybody is wondering, well, how do we get some control into this? And that's where we have the opportunity to teach the grand jury and the trial jury and how they fit into this picture. And if you're on a jury, if you have the intent down of that Constitution, you don't have to know all the ins and outs, all the different title, sections and articles and all of that. You don't have to know that. If you just know that that Constitution was intended to limit the powers of government. And so, and of course, I brought out, and I brought this out before the stock market this excitement came along, how that the Constitution we gave, we the people, made a grant of power to the government. And the Constitution, of course, delineates the amount of power that we intended for them to have. And I brought out how that if the government, if they don't properly administer and enforce the law which we the people wrote, that law, that power which we granted to them, they can't just throw it in the trash. No, they can't do that. They would like to. They would like to throw all this immigration law and all this other stuff. They'd like to throw that in the trash. But we have to get across to the people that when they don't properly administer, they don't properly apply the law, those powers come back to we the people. And they are our powers. The grand jury, when they try their best to keep the grand jury from becoming the check in the system that it's supposed to be, that power comes back to us. And this is what Reverend Manning is actually doing back there in Harlem with this trial that he wants to put together on against Columbia and Obama. They're not the we granted the power to the government to impanel these grand juries and let these grand juries consider these you know, whether there's been a violation of law and such. When they don't do that, when the Justice Department doesn't do that, that power that we gave them to use, if they don't use it, it comes back to us, and we can put it to work and make it work. And so I don't know if I got it across like I'd like to or not, but I think that there's been so many times in history where people have had to do this. They've had to take the powers that they have entrusted to government, and they've had to take them back and enforce them themselves. I thought of the Montana vigilantes back in 1863. The gold camp at Virginia City in Bannock, Montana, there was, I think, about 20,000 miners in that part of the world at that point. And the local elected a sheriff. The local elected sheriff was the leader of a gang of outlaws. And the people gave him the authority to administer the laws and create order in that camp, in that county, in that area. And the sheriff is doing exactly the opposite. He is the kingpin of this gang of outlaws. And when the people found out, they took their powers back. Excuse me. They took their powers back, and in January of 1864, they hung the sheriff. They took their powers back, and they restored law and order to Montana. It was not elected officials. It was not U.S. military. It was not U.S. marshals that brought law and order to the state of Montana back in the 1860s. It was the people themselves that did it. And so, you know, there's an example. It's a little over 100 years old now, of course. But when I was growing up in the 30s, it was less than 100 years before. And I remember visiting with some of the old timers that had been alive and all in the 1860s. They had been young, of course, but they knew the story. And that's just one of the things that intrigues me and one of the reasons why I like history. I'm doing all the talking here. I've got to quit.
Yeah, but you're doing a great job, and I'm over here talking to somebody in chat, so
I'm kind of revved up. I'm sure you're guessing that all right. But the one thing that
does anybody know exactly where the stock market ended up at the end of the day? I had heard it was like a difference of close to 400. It was like 300 and something.
It was under four, and I saw it too, and I forgot what it was now. But
it's 390 something, I think. But they also they've confirmed from several sources. I've been online trying to do a little research, and I found that there's been several confirmations that there was an error made on through an electronic trade where somebody entered a B instead of an M for billion instead of million on a Procter & Gamble trade. And apparently the rest of the trades at the New York Stock Exchange never fell below 56. But that particular trade that was an erroneous electronic trade was down in the mid-40s. And since it was in billions, it made the market appear to drop the way it did when it really didn't. But the problem with that was that it scared all the buyers out of the market.
Oh, yes. Well, everybody had to stand back. They had to stand back and watch and see how it settled out. It wasn't the time to jump in there and try to take advantage of it. It was a time to stand back and let them, make the adjustments that they needed.
Well, Red, we need to get you to make a new seminar. we need to get you talking more on constitutional issues and pecking order and stuff. You know, we've gotten away from talking about pecking order here, and I believe that that for people to really understand the Constitution, they need to start with your pecking order.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to shift gears, but I don't think there's really a whole lot more to talk about. We're going to have to wait and see what happens with the market tomorrow and see if it settles back out the way it seemed to be toward the end of the day. So I think it's going to be interesting tomorrow to watch, but I don't think there's much more we can say about it. Obviously the situation in Greece is destroying the value of the euro as well as damaging the stock market.
The people of Greece are saying, hey, we are not going to bail out the bankers. And this is what this is what it's all about over there. The bankers are the ones that got the country in trouble, and so the people took to the streets today, and of course, you don't know what's going to happen when people take to the streets. You don't know, and of course, I brought up what happened in Romania, in Budapest, on Christmas Eve of 1989, how that the old dictator, the people they just took over the downtown of Budapest. It was just absolute a mass of people, and the old dictator ordered the military to clear the streets. And the military, they were going to go down the street and clear with their tanks and such, and they went just a little ways and stopped, had a little conference, and went back to the government building and arrested the old dictator and his wife, and they had a military tribunal, and they took him out behind the building up against the wall and had a firing squad take care of them. And of course, the story is, it really gets good then, because there was a minister, and here again I'm talking too much, but there was a minister that the government had more or less tried to silence. They had sent him off to a far-off parish someplace in the country, but he was there, and he was up on a balcony above the main street with all this crowd. And when the word came that the dictator and his wife had been executed. He was up there, and they had a PA system. And he led that mass of hundreds of thousands of people, apparently. He led them in the Lord's Prayer. And the people went to their knees right in the street and prayed the Lord's Prayer. Now, that will get my attention, that kind of a story, and I never forget that kind of a story. But the people took their power back. And this is what we have to do in this country. We have to take our power back. We trusted our public servants with our power, and they have violated our trust. They have violated all of the principles that we stood for, and they've tried to destroy our God and get him out of our society and all of that. We've got to take our power back.
Well, I didn't want to say too much more because it's pretty much pure speculation at this point about this thing with the stock market today. Bette and Tallulah are having a pretty good conversation in chat, and I just want to let USMC Vet, one of our regular chat people, know that totally agree that this could very well be a manipulation, and I would assume that until proven innocent, because this is a situation we've watched repeatedly, just like the Soros minions and people.
Yes.
Pulled $500 billion out of the money market right before the election in the fall of 2008. They're famous now for these type of manipulations and putting in a B instead of an M and doing it through an electronic means where it might be more difficult to trace would be an ideal way of doing it so that we may never be able to actually identify the truth or who the source was of doing some of this stuff. But there's no question that an investigation should occur of whoever was holding the shorts on P&G. And when I say shorts, I'm not talking about underwear. I'm talking about the short sale positions in the stock market on P&G. And that's a valid point that made in the chat room. And I just want to acknowledge that and say that I totally believe that this could be a manipulation, as Tallulah has suggested, perhaps to attempt to crash the euro and really the European Union even. They could be trying to soften the borders of that too, just the same way they are with the United States. So this could certainly be a part of that overall international banker scheme, the one world globalist elitist manipulation. And I think we have to consider that, even if we can never really prove the details of it.
I agree.
So, Kate, are you still on with us? I think she's left it to us for the moment.
No, no, I am. It's a delay when I try to unmute myself. I've been enjoying listening to you both, but yes, I'm here.
Well, I'm sure you saw what's going on in chat as well, and it's really too bad we don't have Vet and Tallulah on here talking with us too, so they can be sharing what they're putting in chat with everybody.
Well, why don't they call in if they would like to? But yeah, I've been watching that as well. This is just incredible information.
Well, Tallulah particularly, I would love to have you come on if you're on Skype or I don't know if she's called in or she's just in the. In the chat, you don't know if she's online or not. Sometimes she calls in and listens that way.
The call-in number for everyone is 347-838-9176, and press 1 if you'd like to talk and ask some questions and share what's going on in the chat, because it's very, very interesting.
Red?
Yeah.
We got about 25 minutes before we bring on our guest, right? Elo's supposed to call in at 8 o'clock?
Yes.
I'm in mountain zone, so. I really would like for you to visit a little bit about the Constitution and its intent and the pecking order. I think that we need to revisit that. And No Nonsense Nancy in the chat room here was talking about wishing she had a lesson on the Constitution from Mr. Badnarik, and I'll not say anything about that because, anyway, I'm prejudiced right now. So, but I really would like for you to talk a little bit about your pecking order and the Constitution and its intent.
Well, the founders of this country were men, for the most part, of the Christian faith. And they recognized, I believe, I'm sure, that they recognized that they had seen and experienced a miracle. You've got a ragtag army, volunteers, and you have no government support, really. And they have took on the greatest empire of that day. It was kind of a David and Goliath confrontation, you might say. And with David and Goliath, there was the hand of an almighty God. And there was the hand of an almighty God in the American War of Independence. I don't think that those men back there were trying to take any credit for it. I see nothing that would cause me to think they were taking the credit for that tremendous victory. And so there was no government. There was no government to speak of. They had committees. They had committees of correspondence and one thing another. But they had they communicated back and forth with the patriots in the 13 colonies, and they decided, of course, to have that constitutional convention in 1787. And they really weren't planning on writing a constitution. They were going to try to modernize, you might say, the Articles of Confederation. And they, when they gathered there in Philadelphia in 1776, somehow or other, they came to the conclusion that they needed, they needed to write a constitution, and they didn't call it a constitution to begin with. They called it a declaration when they put it together. But they recognized that they had a higher power, and that was their Heavenly Father, their God. You want to remember that the battle cry in the Revolution was, "No king but Jesus. No king but Jesus." And that was, I can assure you that that was probably echoing in the minds of those delegates at that constitutional convention. And so they put together a constitution, a set of laws, that where they would make a grant of power to a government which they created by law. The Constitution is creative law. They created a government with that law. And so you have the pecking order is developing. You have the Creator God. You have his creation, mankind. His creation, then, are creating creative law, and that creative law creates the government. So you've got God at the top, then mankind, then the Constitution. And this is so hard for people to get across, get into their, really embedded in their mind, is that we are not under the Constitution. I don't have any constitutional rights. I don't want any constitutional rights because I never intend to work for the government. And so my rights are God-given, And we the people wrote a law that was designed to secure those God-given rights. We don't get any rights from that Constitution, whatever. The Constitution, you can call that Constitution the Bill of Rights for government and be very accurate in what you're saying, because the only people that get any rights from the Constitution are the public servants who operate in the different branches of government, which that creative law created. And, you know, the Congress, Article 1 of the Constitution created the legislative branch of government. And they were to have the exclusive power to create legislation. Article 2 of the Constitution created the executive branch of government, and that was to be, they were to be the administrators. And, of course, the judiciary, Article 3 of the Constitution created the judiciary, and the founders said these three branches of government, they're to be checks, one against the other. When have you really seen here in recent times, have you seen the courts and the Congress, the legislative branch of government, really being a check against the executive branch of government? We have seen such collusion. We have seen such, it's criminal. When the administration and the legislative branch of government and the judiciary, when they more or less conspire amongst themselves to usurp the power, the Declaration says abuses and usurpations of power. The founders anticipated that would happen if we didn't maintain a watchful eye. They said eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. I've mentioned before how that in 76 Jimmy Carter was running for president, and I saw him at different times on television. It was one of his favorite lines in his speeches. He would say, "Trust me, trust me." And he should have been saying, "Don't trust me. Don't trust anybody that works for the government." That's the advice we should have gotten, because if you are vigilant, you can't be vigilant and be trusting. It doesn't work that way. And so you have to always be alert. You always have to be paying attention. And you have to, look over the shoulder of every single person out there that works for the government. Now, I hope this is explaining somewhat what you're asking for, Terry. I hope people will get that down pat. It's God at the top. He's the higher power. You go to your Bible, Romans, the 13th chapter, the very first sentence in Romans 13, verse 1, it says, "Let every soul be subject to the higher powers." And the churches are teaching that the government is a higher power. And this is absolute theological error, and it has messed up a lot of people's heads out there, because God is the higher power, and we must of necessity keep him in that position, the top position in the order of authority. And what people just don't understand is that you and I, outside of government, there's only one higher power than us, and that is our God. And but like George H. Bush, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, all of those people, all of the congressmen, all of the senators, all of the nine justices of the Supreme Court and the judges of the appellate courts and the judges in the lower courts, every one of them have two higher powers above them. They've got two higher powers that they have to be subject to. One is their God, and number two is they are subject to the law, which is the Constitution for the United States of America. And so just I wish people could get that indelibly printed on their minds. God, mankind, then the Constitution, then the government, the Congress, Article 1, the legislative branch, Article 2, the administrators, the administrative law, the executive branch, I should say, and number 3 is the judiciary. And, you know, I've got to point out here, where does the grand jury fit into this order of authority? The grand jury is at our level above the Constitution, not below the Constitution. The grand jury is above the Constitution. The petit jury, the trial jury, is above the Constitution. They're at your level and mine, and they're there to secure our God-given rights. I don't know how to put it anymore. Blunt.
Long story short is that in order for the Constitution to maintain the pecking order that it was designed to maintain, it's got to be defended, and the people have to defend it. And here's a question out of chat from USMC, and he's got several comments here that I think we should address. But he says, how do we reinstitute de jure law and extinguish de facto commercial admiralty law? And, you know, right now, while you're thinking about your answer to that, Red, let me say that there's a lot of people out there right now who think they have the answer to that and are actually trying to implement plans and put them into play to try to restore the de jure governments. That's not the question that Bed has asked. He's asking about de jure law versus the de facto corporate and admiralty law. He said commercial, but we know what he's talking about.
Well, let me say this. Over the life of our country, the legal profession, from the very beginning, the ink wasn't even dry on the Constitution when the signers signed it. And we had the legal profession was already working to subvert all of this. And they've spent these 200-plus years trying to monopolize the law and the interpretation or the translation of it. And they have led us down too many bad trails, bad roads. And you see, admiralty law, that's law that you and I are probably never going to be affected by. But there will be always be a place for admiralty law. And there will be a place for equity, equity law. The law that they have forgotten, and this is how you're going to have to implement the common law to bring back the lawful government created by the Constitution for the United States of America. It's not the Constitution of the United States, it's the Constitution for the United States. The common law, of course, you see, Congress will pass enabling legislation. And to give different agencies of government the tasks that they are supposed to take care of. These agencies of government will create administrative law. And this is what lawyers like. They love administrative law. And it's a very serious trap. You know, we have people that are in trouble with the Internal Revenue Service, and they get a 90-day letter, and they end up, they petition the tax court, and the tax court isn't a court at all. It's a, and the Constitution, you can't apply the Constitution in that tax court. You can't use a constitutional argument. Everything is administrative law in that tax court. And so we've been winning these cases pretty regular now, and people all over the country are beginning to use this, where they go in, they petition the tax court, and when the court has accepted their petition and set a time for trial, then the people sit down and write a motion to dismiss, and they support that motion to dismiss with a judicial notice. People need to take their Black Law Dictionary and look up judicial notice and get a good handle on what a judicial notice is. You got to make sure that you stick with the truth. And this judicial notice that you serve on that on the court, the judicial notice is supporting the motion to dismiss. And you cite the judge for his conflict of interest, because he is a government agent. And for all practical purposes, he is a IRS agent. He is a party to the action. He has a conflict of interest which precludes him from making any finding of fact or conclusion of law. Now, the fact that you cannot get constitutional due process in that tax court makes it so that it is not a lawful court. It's not a constitutional court. It's a fabrication. It's a trap that has been manufactured by the IRS, the agency to collect taxes, and they're using all administrative law, and the judge, he has this conflict of interest. He is not neutral. The legal term for this is he is denied impartiality. And so common law just wipes out. When you apply common law, just takes all of the administrative procedures and basically just push them right off the end of the desk into the trash. And so this is going to happen, and it's happening in cases, certain cases, as we speak, as we're thinking here. People all over the country are catching on to this idea that these judges in the federal court system especially, they're the biggest problem. They're just ignoring the fact that they have a conflict of interest, and unless people challenge them on it, you're going to lose in their courts almost 90% of the time, or 99%, I suppose. But this is going to change. It's in the process of changing right now, because people are gathering up the truth and applying it. And boy, I'll tell you, this is an exciting time to be alive when you get a handle on some of this stuff. I better shut up here and let somebody ask another question, because we've only got a few minutes now before the next hour and our guest.
Well, everybody's listening to you, and somebody suggested that we need to lure all the criminals out of the 10-square-mile protective playpen and arrest them all. And my friend Katie put on here that all we'd have to do is put out a bunch of laptops with porn on them and should do the trick to lure them out.
Baited trap.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I know that one of the things that Elo is going to be talking about when she comes on, we're going to take a break here in about 4 minutes, and then after that, hopefully Elo will have called in and be ready to talk about Fija and some of the things that she's working on. But I know she's going to be talking about our kids and the way that they've been corrupted in our schools, and how severe of a problem that's become. But I gotta put it out here. We got a real problem with our the elite, the pagans, the Luciferians, many of whom are in elected office. Those that are not in elected office are controlling them from because they control the purse strings, and they also control a lot of crime. I happen to believe they control a lot of drugs. But they've got a lot of brainwashed people, what you like to call brain-soiled people out there. And those people are sex slaves a lot, and they are a part and behind of a lot of the children disappearing. A lot of the kids you see on milk cartons and kids that there's never any information that comes out after they're kidnapped and they're never found are put into some of these programs. And I have to say, I am confident. The research that I've done and the testimony that I've heard, you know, even about that interpreter that was a whistleblower that talked about Dennis Pastor and others, where, you know, it was actually admitted and known that they were involved in sexual situations that were a part of this whole really a conspiracy, a network of people who are very perverted. I sincerely believe that a lot of our politicians are fully aware and participate in some of these sex slave activities, and our kids are at risk. And parents out there, grandparents out there, man, watch your kids, know where they are, and who's talking to them, and keep a close eye on those schools. And if there's a way to get your kid out of public schools at this point, I believe that that's really about the only solution, unless you can really go out there and get on a school board and really make some big changes and difference in your local areas. But our kids are tremendously at risk. And so I'll shut up and give you the next 2 minutes before we go to break, Red.
Well, I think that, perversion, I had a call this afternoon, and a fellow was telling about an evangelical church. I could tell you the denomination, but I won't. This well-known pastor made a trip to Europe and took a homosexual prostitute with him, and he's been exposed. And of course, we all know what happened to the pastor of that mega church in Colorado Springs. Terry, you know a great deal about that. It's not too far from you. And these people, what happens is they teach, a watered down, an easy gospel and one thing another, and they teach theological error in their churches, and they're incorporated, and they have a tax exempt number and all of that. And when these ministers do this, they lose the protection of the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit will protect you from these kind of traps if you are living properly and in God's will. But so many of these, especially these people, monster churches, are doing it with their salesmanship and their personality and that, and not by the Holy Spirit. And
we're up against a time of break, but I wanted to do, yeah. we've got a live mic, I think, on area code 406 that's got their hand up. Caller?
That would probably be Elo.
Elo? Is she in at 406?
Yeah, that's Montana.
Elo, are you there?
She probably hasn't punched one yet.
She did punch one, and I thought Kate was going to give her a live mic.
Hi there.
Is this Elo?
It is Elo. Hello.
Hello, Elo. We are up against a break, so if you can hang on for just a second. We're going
to
take a quick break, and then let Red introduce you.
Thank you.
Let's go to break.
Thank you. stop and count successes like diamonds in my hands. But those trophies could not equal to the grace by which I stand. In Christ alone I place my trust and find my
back to Walls in Our Minds. Red, you have the floor.
Yes, this is a real honor for me to introduce Elo Jones to this audience. And I'm going to tell just a little bit of a story first here, because it wasn't but just a few years ago that the Fully Informed Jury Association, there were some lawyers, opportunists, I think, and that's about the worst I can say publicly like this. In private, I would say something much worse. But they tried to make it a hostile takeover of the Fully Informed Jury Association. We had a couple of outstanding directors. Larry Pratt from the Gun Owners of America was a director for quite a long time, and of course Charles Key, the legislator from Oklahoma, that has done such a fantastic job there of working for our cause. He was removed by these lawyers and such, and it was some very, very strong ladies. Elo was one of the ladies, and they got rid of those lawyers. I don't know how they did it yet, but they did, and they put Fiji back on track, and today they're stronger than ever. And so it's really an honor for me to introduce Elo, because she is the executive director. She lives in Helena, Montana. And, of course, anything that comes out of Montana, I perk up my ears because I got Montana in my blood. And I would much prefer to be there yet. but I'm not there. And so Fija at this point is in good hands. Those ladies are doing a great job. And Elo,
thank you, Red.
It's good to have you here.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be here. And I have to tell you how we managed to rescue Fija and get it back on track. And this is the absolute truth. We prayed. We prayed. Julie Shepherd, Margie Crook, and I prayed. And we prayed together. We knew what time the other ones would be praying, and we actually held a prayer. That's what we did. We didn't ask that God rescue Fija. We asked God to, for whatever was best for Fija, that's what should happen. And it was better than any of us could have imagined what happened. The lawyers resigned, and we were able to reform the board and go on. And I think some of the lawyers were just, they really had their own ideas for what Fija should be, which was not the ideas we started Fija with when we had our first board meeting back in 1992. And you can see a picture of all of us who were at that first board meeting, including Larry Pratt, on our website in the history section, and you'll see Don and Larry and me and Honey and Gary and Larry Dodge, Larry Pratt, and Kathy all there on the steps of this big ranch house where we had the first board meeting. But there was always a very specific vision and message when you put the spark into the minds of Larry Dodge and Don Doig. That spark was that Fija would go out and educate people about their individual, private, absolute authority to nullify bad laws when the government makes mistakes and passes bad laws, or when the government doesn't make a mistake, even worse, and passes a bad law. That has always been Fija's mission. We have always been an educational group to educate everyone, give them the word that as a juror they have the absolute right to work as a check on bad government by refusing to enforce bad laws, and that's called jury nullification, of course.
Yeah,
I wanted to right now, well, before we get involved in talking about things, to give everybody our website, which is fija.org, and also we have an information telephone number. If you call that, you will receive a free packet of information on how you can be a conscientious juror who owns your own mind and follows your own sense of justice and your own sense of right and wrong, even above government, that you will use your conscience to render justice. That number is 1-800-TELL-JURY, T-E-L, with one L, T-E-L-J-U-R-Y. And in numbers, it's 1-800-835-5879. Thank you, Red. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, I hope a lot of people wrote those numbers down and such, and I hope that a lot of people send for that packet, and I hope they slip at least a $20 bill in there. And
we can use it right now.
get your newsletter, which is always great, and become a part of this thing, and you'll see those beautiful brochures that they have, so well designed, and you're going to want a bunch of those brochures that you can hand out in your own community and such. And there's something about Fija that is different, and it is not a national top-heavy organization like NRA. I use NRA as an example of a top-heavy organization. The state organizations are autonomous, and to me, it's so practical the way they have organized it and all, and they're getting a lot of good out of every buck that comes to their way. So I don't think there's any organization out there that gets more for the buck than the Fully Informed Jury Association.
We like to think so. We like to think that we can squeeze a nickel and get 8 pennies out of it, actually. And sometimes we do. I wanted to talk a little bit this evening, if I might, about a couple of campaigns FIJA has going on right now around the country. And if you go on our website and click on our forum, you can go and read people about people who are discussing some of these, and you could also check out our recent news articles. We have the Lunch Break for Liberty going on right now all across the nation. People, young people especially, who were involved in the Ron Paul and the Give Me Liberty movements and other organizations are ordering or just printing it out from our website, which you can also do for free. And when you order it from us, we basically subsidize it. We want you to have it. If you don't have any money to order our literature, let us know. We'll try to find a sponsor for you to have literature to pass out, because we want you to become part of our Lunch Break for Liberty. We want you to take one lunch break a week, go with some friends, find some other people who are also involved in working to educate jurors, and hand out literature outside of your courthouse, in your community. If you don't live in a town with a courthouse, then hand out literature anywhere you can find a place to hand it out, even if it's by your cousin's coffee shop. But take one lunch break a week and pass out FIJA literature. Talk to people about FIJA, or take the time to write a letter to the editor of your local paper, or be a guest speaker at a luncheon group, for instance, some of the civic groups that have luncheon meetings, or appear on a radio or television program as a speaker and talk about FIJA and how this is such a wonderful, peaceful, individual way not only to protect our rights, but to take back some of the rights which government makes it very difficult for us to exercise these days, because they've passed so many heinous laws that violate the supreme law of our land, which is, of course, the Constitution as our supreme legal law of our land. I want to also talk a little bit about a new opportunity we have for people. We have a new program that's a 6-part seminar called Challenge for Churches. Again, that's a 6-part seminar. It's called Challenge for Churches, Serving Justice Through Conscience. We believe, or I believe, FIJA is an organization, so it doesn't believe or think anything, so I shouldn't say we. But I believe that our conscience is one of our primary gifts from our Creator, from God. And our conscience, if we listen to it, helps us know right from wrong. It helps us know what we should do. It helps us know justice. And so when you teach Christians in their churches, and we hope to do others, but right now we only have one for Christians, but when you teach people that they have both the obligation and the authority to follow the dictates of their conscience, that they have a right to consult with their conscience as an individual, as a private person, and render a verdict based on conscience, then they will learn when government is doing what it's supposed to do and when it is overstepping those bounds. And so besides getting the Challenge for Churches seminar for your church, or even for one of your friends' churches if they can't afford it, because it does cost $50 for the series, and that's because we had to have some professional work done. But it comes with a set of discussion questions and a selection of literature and a reading list. So I want to encourage you to get that. We hope to have it up on our website within the next year and available for free download. We're working on that now, but it's a rather complicated process, which I can't even describe. So if you get that and take it to your pastor or your minister or your priest and share it with them and ask them if you can lead the discussion group, and let us know that if you even need help with that, we can send some other literature to you, because we'd like to get this message out to as many churches as possible so that people will be willing to serve on juries and, in fact, will want to serve on juries when they see that this is a peaceful way to fight back, but a peaceful way. I shouldn't say fight back. That sounds like war. It's a peaceful way to stand up to government when government is trying to take away our human rights. So those are two of our big programs we have going on right now.
Terry, Dr.
Red,
Kate.
I'm here, but you're in charge, Red.
Well, not really. You're the
host.
Here.
Let me talk a little bit for those who aren't familiar with Fiji then about the history of jury nullification. In the Magna Carta in 1215, one of the new rules, which was, and the Magna Carta is part of the codification of the common law, it was that government, at that time it was a king, but it doesn't make any difference what kind of government it is. Government has power and tends to become corrupted. So they said in the Magna Carta that if a person was brought to trial under the laws of the government, and at that time it was King John, that person had the right to a trial by jury, because the jury could protect them if the king was just angry with them and trying to take all their land or even their life or whoever it was, or if the king was passing bad or silly laws. The jury worked so well after the Magna Carta that in 1670, when William Penn, who later founded Pennsylvania, was preaching the Quaker religion on the streets of London and arrested for doing so and brought to trial for doing so, the jury, who thought the laws under which he was being tried, which said that no other religion but the Church of England could be mentioned or taught in England, the jury thought that was a silly law. Well, on that jury, there was one very brave fellow who happened to be Jewish, but there were also some very brave Christians on that jury, and they simply refused to convict William Penn. They were thrown in prison without food and water, and they were fined because they wouldn't render the verdict that the judge told them to render. They took their case to the Court of Common Pleas, which in London is like, in England is like the Supreme Court here. And Justice Vaughan said that jurors could not be punished for their verdict, even if it was in direct contradiction to the orders of the court. Well, of course, the judge in that case worked for the king and for the government, and so the judge had a vested interest in getting the verdict. He wanted to enforce the government law since the government signed his paycheck, right? I don't know if they had paychecks then. The government may have given him his pieces of silver. But in any event, William Penn was exonerated. The jury was set free. Outside of the court in London, Old Bailey, there is a monument to this case because it established forever the right of the jury to render a verdict based on conscience, even if in direct violation of the instructions of the court. Now, that's how far back jury nullification has been championed and codified. So when our founders were writing the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, they knew about this. They knew about William Penn, of course, and they were meeting in Philadelphia, for heaven's sakes, in Pennsylvania. So they knew about what happened in William Penn's trial. They knew how jurors could protect people from bad and malicious government acts. And so they wrote that not only into the Constitution, but later, during the Constitutional Convention, they wrote it into the Bill of Rights. The right of the jury to nullify or to have final say is mentioned three times in the Bill of Rights. Later on, but before that, let me back up a minute. In colonial America, there was a publisher named John Petersinger who criticized the king's appointed governor of New York, and he was brought to trial for libel. The jury refused to convict him on the grounds that he was telling the truth. And that helped to establish freedom of the press in this country. Okay, William Penn, freedom of religion. John Petersinger case, freedom of the press. Then in 1692, during the Salem witch trials, when there was really just a lot of hysteria, they finally stopped bringing people to trial and accusing them of being witches, because I believe it was 36 juries in a row refused to convict the person on trial. They were just sick of it. After the Revolutionary War, when the country was in debt, George Washington, and I'm sorry to report this about the father of our country, but he instituted a tax on the corn farmers of Pennsylvania to tax their whiskey, which was corn liquor. It was how they were able to take their corn, convert it into a product that they could bring to market, and, you know, when they could get to market, and still get value from it, because they couldn't just keep the corn around forever, you know, and it was a big thing to carry. Now, this is really what happened. And so the Whiskey Rebellion took place, and many of the tax collectors were chased out of town. A couple of them were tarred and feathered, and many of the whiskey rebels were brought to trial. The whiskey tax was abandoned. Nobody tells you this, but the whiskey tax of the Whiskey Rebellion of 1794 was abandoned because the government was unable to get one single conviction from any jury. Bet you most people listening didn't know that. During the time of the Fugitive Slave Act, many jurors, especially Quakers, refused to find guilty people who were hiding or helping escaped slaves. And so the Fugitive Slave Act pretty much had to be abandoned. But the jury simply nullified the law. They practiced jury nullification. Everybody knew about jury nullification back then. It was only around the turn of the century in a case called Sparf and Hansen versus the United States when it was ruled that judges no longer needed to inform the juries of their right to judge both the law and the facts, because everybody already knew that. So they decided that nobody needed to tell them anymore because they all knew that already. And this is in spite of all the quotes you can find on our website about things such as the first Supreme Court Justice, John Jay, who said juries have the right to judge the law as well as the facts in any case before them. John Quincy Adams said a juror has the right to judge the law based on conscience, even if it is in direct opposition to the directions of the court. Thomas Jefferson wrote about this. It was very obvious that the founders understood that the role of the jury was not necessarily to find guilt and innocence of a party brought in by the government, and not necessarily to dispense punishment, but the jury was there to protect all individuals from government when government overstepped the very strict limitations of its power and authority. During Prohibition, then, that ill-fated attempt to get people to do what other people wanted, jurors also refused to convict people who were buying or selling whiskey. They refused to convict Vietnam-era protesters. Lately, they have refused to convict medical marijuana patients, and they've also refused to convict people who either were carrying a weapon or used a weapon in self-defense when there was no other charge against them and they had not hurt anyone or threatened anyone other than in self-defense. So jury nullification has a proud history, not only in our country, but all the way back to the Magna Carta. I'll be quiet for a minute if anybody has any questions.
Everyone's really enjoying your history lesson, and especially
well,
in the chat. You're getting good comments from the chat room, too, so keep right on going. Feel free to continue to comment.
I'd like to hear
a little bit about, how the children are being subverted in our schools.
Oh, my. Oh, you're getting me off on one of my very favorite subjects. I don't know if Fred told you this or not. Lately, I've been doing a lot of interviews as well on encouraging people to rescue their children from government schools. In fact, I'll be doing another one on Hallie Stone's show on May the 12th, early in the morning, I think at 8 o'clock. And she's in Idaho, and I'm sorry I don't remember the name of the radio station or the blog radio, but it's Halli Stone and Friends. I think it's Hallie Stone and Friends, and I'll be on there. We've talked about it on there before. And I want to really encourage people to do something that I did many years ago, probably more years ago than most of you are old, because I have grown children and two grandchildren. But when my daughters were young, we went to look at the government schools in the town where we lived, and we decided we could not do that to our innocent daughters. We simply could not send them to a place where there were people working who obviously had such a completely different agenda than we had for our daughters, and so we were able to find a building. It was an old parish school that was not in use, where some other parents had just begun to put together a community school, and the parish agreed to rent it to us for a very small amount, and we had to do a lot of work fixing it up, but we saved our children from the government schools, and that school is still around today at St. Elizabeth Parish in Milwaukee. There are many community schools, but I want to not make parents think that they have to go found a big school, a big private school, where they have a lot of high bills to pay and huge budgets, because that is not the case. There's a wonderful fellow down in Florida named Robert Dreyfus, and he and I have talked about this a lot and about community schools and how parents can rescue their children. If you cannot homeschool, and I encourage you to do that because children belong with their parents, and if you have two parents working, usually if one stays home, it doesn't really reduce your income very much, because you're also now, you have the time to cook good meals, you have time to sew and mend and take care of a lot more things in your life than you would if you were out there working for somebody else and giving the government half your money. If you stay home, your children are going to get their values from you. If you don't feel that you want to undertake the task alone, I would encourage you to talk to other parents in your church. Get together a group of two or three or four or five families. Go to your pastor. Churches usually have empty rooms during the week. And they usually have nice kitchens, by the way, for fixing lunches, unless you want to just send sack lunches, which is fine too. But ask them if you can have a one-room schoolhouse in the church. And get the parents together. You may need to, if you live in a state where it's required that you have at least one licensed teacher, I'll bet you almost everybody out there knows one or two wonderful teachers who would love to leave teaching in government schools, but they really have a calling to teach children, and they will come and work with you. We were lucky. We had some wonderful nuns who came and worked in our school, and we also had some wonderful teachers who came and worked in our school. But it doesn't take that much. All it takes is people who have a dedicated mission, who want their children to grow up with good moral values, a sense of right and wrong, and they also want to teach their children to listen to and follow their conscience. If there's one thing that concerns me today about government schools, they teach the children there, the poor little children, they teach them to listen to and follow the authority, the teacher, the principal, whoever the government authority is. They teach them to follow the authority of the government. They try to replace God with government, and I don't think anybody can argue with me about that. We see that all over. So I want to encourage you, and now it's almost summertime, so all of you parents out there, if you need more help getting this done, get in touch with me, because I really feel this is a calling of mine, and I've been doing this for obviously a long time since I started when my daughters were very young. But I want you to find a way to rescue your children from government schools, and the sooner you do it, the better off they will be. If they aren't yet in school, I want you to keep them safe from government schools. Give them an opportunity to grow up in a good way and have a good life and be good people and not be sent to a school where they have to learn to just squash their conscience and squash who they are and learn to stand in a line and follow orders and never question authority. We want them to question authority. Even God is not afraid of questions. And Jesus welcomed questions, by the way. We want children to grow up knowing right from wrong, and they are not going to be taught that in government schools where they learn situational ethics and tolerance for everything. We don't have a place for that in a healthy, decent society. So, again, go to your pastor, and maybe you don't know all the people in your church, and so just go ahead and go to your pastor by yourself and tell them what your idea is and what you hope to do and that you need help. We will. this is not Fiji's mission. This is Elo's mission. But I feel very strongly about it, and so does Hallie Stone over in Idaho, and there are other people, Bob Dreyfus down in Florida. We will all help in any way we're able to help. We want you to be able to have the option of rescuing your children from government schools, taking them out of that school, and teaching them in a way so that they can grow up to be decent, kind people who have a good set of values and have good morals. And I don't know how long you two want me to talk about this, because I can talk about it a long time. I'll stop for a minute, though.
Well, there's a lot of people out there who I believe we're up against a break.
That was good timing.
Yeah, we'll be right back in just a couple of minutes with Walls in Your Mind. Welcome back to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd. I'm on with my co-host, Red Beckman, and in the background is Dr. Kate and perhaps even Mama Cooks. I know that she was having some computer issues and has been dealing with a situation with her daughter today. They don't have an exact diagnosis, but I know that they're very concerned about Mama Cooks, also Janet Barnes is her real name. her daughter is not doing well health-wise, and she's been struggling with that today. So if Mama Cooks is out there, I just want to extend our prayers to you and to your daughter. And I know that you, she also has, you have some grandchildren there, and we just want to request everyone that's listening that you please add Mama Cooks and her daughter to your prayers. So Elo, you were talking about our school system. This is Elo Jones, for anyone who just joined us. Elo Jones is the executive director of Fully Informed Jury Association, and we are very pleased to have you with us tonight.
Thank you. First of all, before we go back to talking about schools and rescuing your children from SAME, I'd like to take just a minute to give everyone our contact information again. In case you didn't have a pencil before, I hope you have one now. Our website is fija.org, and we have just a wealth of information there. If you go to our library, you'll find our newsletters, our brochures. All of these things can be printed out free. Please feel free to use any information you find on our website. If you'd like our free packet of information on your authority and your duty as a juror to refuse to enforce bad laws, please call 1-800-TELL-JURY. That's 1-800-TEL with one L, jury. That's 800-835-5879 in numbers. And when you finish reading that, share it with someone else in your office or your family or your church, because this is information about how to preserve and protect our individual human rights. And we all know human rights do not come from government. They came from our Creator. So please help us to teach everyone on how one of the best ways they can protect our human rights. We all know that we have a few votes, and I will get back to schools in a minute, but when you're on a grand jury, you get to vote. When you go to elections, you vote. And when you're on a petit jury, you vote. The votes you have on the grand jury and the petit jury are so essential and important to protecting and preserving justice in our country. And most of you will be called to serve on a petit jury. That's a jury of 12. And if it's a case where it's an individual being prosecuted by the government, I want you to be skeptical about the prosecutor, about the judge, and about most of the witnesses called by the prosecution, because almost all of those people will be paid by government, and they will have an agenda to advance the power of the government more than they have agenda to protect the rights of the individual. Now, that's not always the case, but it's very often the case. And so you must be very skeptical of everything they tell you, especially the instructions that they give you, because, again, they are paid by the government, and they have a vested interest in preserving that institution. The jury is there to protect the rights of the individual who is on trial, even though the prosecutor may be trying to win the case for the for his or her government paycheck maker. The judge is supposed to be fair, but the judge is also paid by the government. The police are paid by the government. Very often the forensics experts are paid by the government. And many of the witnesses you will find on a prosecution by the government against an individual are government employees. I want you to keep that in mind. And I'm not painting them all with the same brush, because there are some, I think, who try to do a good job and try to be honest. Many of them are caught in a system where it is difficult for them to be honest, and I would suggest that they leave government and find honest work and abandon that den of vipers and go do something else for a living. But that's up to them. That's a personal choice. But again, when you serve on a petit jury, you have a very powerful vote. You can keep an innocent person from being harmed by government. And you can keep some harmless person who has never hurt, injured, or even threatened another human being from being punished by government or fined by government by simply refusing to convict. So do that. Now, let's talk about schools a little bit more and how to rescue your children. First of all, you need to check in the state where you live. and see if you're allowed to homeschool. And if you feel prepared to do that, there are some wonderful curricula available online, and many also available through many churches and through many homeschool associations that you can use in teaching your children at home. So you don't need to have a PhD in education to be a good teacher. If you are your child's parent, guess what? God had the perfect design. You were chosen to be your child's teacher. That's why you received the gift of your child. So you are there to be their primary teacher until they're old enough to go out on their own. It doesn't matter. You cannot turn that responsibility over to some government agency and some government employees. And unfortunately, these days, many parents think that they're doing the right thing when they send their children off to government schools, because they too went to government schools, and so they were taught that. But you were given these children so that you could teach them and raise them up in the way you would want them to go. And you can do that best when you remember that as their parent, you are their primary teacher, and you can take responsibility and authority for making decisions about their education just the way you make those same kinds of decisions when you serve as a juror. So find out what the laws are in your state for homeschooling. If you feel just a little overwhelmed by the prospect of trying to homeschool your child or your children by yourself, talk with your spouse about it and see if you can work out something so that if one of you has to work full-time, the other one may be able to fill in on the math or the art or something, so that you, the whole burden doesn't fall on one parent. And I know many parents who have very wonderful cooperative teaching systems set up for their children, and they're doing a wonderful job. They have beautiful children who are bright. Their minds have not been squashed down to fit into the little government holes and, you know, the little square pegs and round holes thing. So these children are brilliant. They are so far ahead of government school children, and they have beautiful spirits. And I think that's the thing I always notice first, because they are loved, and they are appreciated for who they are, and they are cherished, and they're being instructed and taught, and they're going to make fine and wonderful people when they grow up. And they're already fine and wonderful people, even if they're small children. So that's the first suggestion I have for homeschooling. Again, though, if you feel that you need to have a bigger support group, I would highly recommend that you get involved through your church and try to start a small, independent community school, a cooperative school, a voluntary school with the support of your church. And I think if you stand up, say three families of parents and children stand up in front of their church members, in front of the congregation, and let them know what you want to do and ask for their prayers and their practical assistance in getting together desks and books and everything you need and explain to them why you are doing this, you are going to be amazed at the outpouring of support, cooperation, voluntary assistance, enthusiasm, people who offer to come in and teach, say, organic chemistry for a month, or someone will offer to teach piano one day a week, one afternoon a week for the children. I teach art for homeschool families here. I have a studio here at my home, and I teach art for groups of homeschoolers because I really believe in what they're trying to do, and I want to help. And I think if you do this, you will find that you will be showered with blessings, because we all know when we're on the right path, the heavens open on our behalf. It always happens. It never fails. I truly believe that. I believe that we are surrounded by miracles every moment. And when we ask for them for good and for a good cause and for specific reasons, the ways always open. So don't be afraid. And if you need help putting together a model or putting together your plan, there's help available on the internet. If you get in touch with me through the FEJA offices, I will be happy to put you in touch with some people who can help you if it's more than I can do at the time, because I'm sometimes really busy, and I don't mean to shirk my obligations, but I do know my limitations. So there's always a way. And there may be someone in your congregation who will stand up and say, you know, I was thinking about that. I'm going to, and I was a principal at a government school, and I always thought there was, we could do so much better. Let me help. You will be amazed at the gifts and the people who come forward to help. And it will become a rallying point for the congregation that they have this school. People will come and ask if they how do I get my children involved in this? What do I need to do to get my children involved? And they may be people who, by the way, have never sent their children to church, never have taken them to Sunday school. And suddenly, they're part of a church family. And that is such an amazing blessing just because you have a school to offer them where they can become part of a loving Christian community through the school. So it's also another way to fulfill your mission work. Okay, any questions?
I just have one comment.
Yes.
Actually, there's two comments in this, so I'm gonna lay them out there. I think the greatest thing lacking in our schools are teachers who care about the students. If they care about them, they will discipline them. Back in the mid-'80s, there was an article that showed up in Nashville, Tennessee in Nashville. And they had observed that there were three elementary schools there that far exceeded the performance of the other schools. The schools had fewer problems, they had greater discipline, and the kids were outperforming the other kids in other schools by a substantial margin. There was one common thread of those three elementary schools, and that was that the principals were all graduates of David Lipscomb College or David Lipscomb University.
Wow. And so they understood what it meant to have order and obedience and attention and good manners. Yes.
For those who are not familiar with David Lipscomb, it's basically a Church of Christ school, which is an ultra-conservative Christian college or school. And those principals understood the benefits to the children of maintaining a disciplined environment and caring about the kids.
That's a wonderful story. That was okay, that's one thing you were going to say. What's the other thing?
It covered both of them. It covered it
because
the discipline was there for the benefit of the kids.
Oh, it is, because if children know that they're going into a safe, peaceful environment where they have to also fit into that safe, peaceful environment, where they're not allowed to go into chaos and start acting out and breaking the rules, and they know that there will be consequences if they break the rules, and that those rules are their boundaries for behavior, they're much more comfortable. They feel safe because now they know what kind of a situation they are in, and they know what will happen. How wonderful for children to be able to walk into an environment like that, as opposed to some of the schools these days where the children just are so undisciplined, they feel free to just do all kinds of things. The teacher may yell and scream, but doesn't ever do anything else except maybe cry. And so the children run the classroom. And that's
yes.
not the way it's supposed to be. It's not that way in a family either.
Red, we've only got about 12 minutes left to show. I better be quiet and let you get your comments in here, because I know you're thinking something.
I would just like to tell a little story. Back about 20 or 25 years ago, I was invited to speak to an organization of homeschoolers, and they would meet on a regular basis once a month or whatever and have a meeting, and I was invited to come and speak. And the gal that was kind of the master of ceremonies that night had quite a story. She was the mother of five children. Her husband was on the local school board, and excuse me. She had a son. He was 10 or 12 years old, and he was kind of starting to cause some problems in the school. The teachers were complaining and one thing another. And she kind of took a look at that and analyzed the situation, and she took all five of her children out of that public school, that government school, and started homeschooling them. And she told how that she was having problems with that young son at home. It wasn't just in the school. And she said after she started the homeschooling, it was just a matter of a few short weeks. And that son of hers just shaped up beautiful, and she had no more problems. But she explained how that this is what is happening in the government schools. The children have a tendency to become mentally crippled. And she basically was saying that this is what was happening to her young son. And she recognized it, and here her husband is on the school board, but she took all five of her children out of the government schools. And I've never forgotten that, because I guess I never forgot it, because here she was, her husband was on the school board and all, but she recognized that there was a serious problem, and she wanted to protect her own children, and she did. And what a tremendous experience for me to hear that story at that meeting that night. I'll never forget it.
That's a wonderful story. And I want to also remind everyone that it is probably past the time when you can reform government schools, which is a top-down structure, by serving on a local school board or a PTA or even teaching in a government school, because the culture that pervades government schools is a top-down culture. And you will spend a great deal of time fighting to make one little inroad when you could take that same energy and invest it in rescuing your own children, encouraging other parents to rescue their children, and finding other ways to educate these children. Because remember, this country did not start with public schools and government schools. This country started with schools mostly inside of the churches. And when Jefferson wrote about the separation of church and state, he was writing about the separation of education and state, the separation of school and state. And I think it's time we take back that separation of church and state to include the separation of school and state, and associate our educational process for our children with our churches or inside of the families where some of the best teaching goes on.
One thing that I've observed, Elo, is that today Planned Parenthood and gay parents, or excuse me, gay couples are welcome to come and speak in a health class. But if you try to invite or get a, let's say, some group like CCS in Denver, which is a Christian-backed adoption service that also does single parent counseling for pregnant unwed mothers, and you know, they coach them not to think about abortion and help them understand the problems with abortion, and then give them the option of either assisting them with their baby and their pregnancy, or if the person just can't deal with it, to provide them with good Christian parents for adoption.
Yes,
you get
wonderful.
Somebody like that, one of their counselors, you start trying to get them into talk into one of those health classes in school, and you would think somebody had committed bloody murder.
Well, we'll have to hope that a case comes up sometimes on some of these issues where we have a fully informed jury so we can set the government courts right. Because I know I've seen exactly what you're talking about, and again, it is a cultural agenda. It is coming down from the top of this structure, and some things it's easier to not fight them, but simply walk away. You know, and I often say we have to be the hobbits. We have to just, you know, we'll be the little quiet people. We'll be the little pilgrims that go out, and we're not going to argue with them or fight them. We're just going to leave them in their insanity and depravity, and we'll just go off and do things the way we know it's the right way to do them for the sake of our children. Do I have time to give the FIJA information one more time?
We have about 4 to 5 minutes, Eva.
Okay.
You are welcome to do whatever you'd like.
Thank you. I have a few things to say then. Governments have been created by individual sovereign humans to serve only one function, our government anyway, and that is to protect our inherent individual rights as sovereign humans. And again, these rights are not given to us by government. They are not granted to us by government. They aren't made legal by government. Human rights, and everyone, all humans on earth, have the same human rights from their creator. These human rights come to us from our creator. They do not come from government, not in any instance, for any individual on earth. The only reason governments have been formed is to protect the rights of individuals. There is no other reason that's valid for government, and I'm not sure if that sole function cannot be better served by individual initiative and cooperative voluntary efforts, actually. But I'll leave that alone for the moment. That's another discussion. Governments have a very limited authority of what they are supposed to do, and we need to make sure that one of those is not education, by the way. We need for everyone to make sure that they are qualified to serve on a jury, that they are on the jury rolls, and sometimes that means being a registered voter, and that doesn't mean you have to vote if you don't want to, but just be a registered voter so you can be called for jury duty. Sometimes it means, I think in some jurisdictions now, it's having a driver's license, and some people can do that and some people can't, but if you are too old to drive, you can still serve on a jury by calling the clerk of courts and telling them that you want to serve on a jury. If there's some reason you can't drive, and you know that's how they choose jury members in your county or in your state, let the clerk of courts know that you want to be part of the jury pool. And remember when you get there that you are there as a human being with your own mind, your own ability to think, to ask questions, and answer questions just as good as anybody else. You have the same brain and the same design as all the lawyers and judges in that room. You can determine right from wrong. You can decide whether or not the case is fair. You can make those judgments. You, because you are an individual with a conscience and the ability to think, are the reason we have juries. If we had no government at all, we would still need juries to render justice, wouldn't we? Maybe judges could do it sometimes, but judges then, of course, wouldn't be working for government if we had no government. But the nice thing about having a jury is that you have a group of people, they all have different opinions and backgrounds, and they probably aren't there. I mean, they think the chances are pretty much nil that they are there conspiring against either the government or the defendant. They are there to render justice. And in all my years of working with FIJA, I've talked to, I cannot tell you how many jurors who have called to talk with me, especially after cases, because they were concerned that they had given up their verdict of not guilty just to go along with the rest of the jurors, even though they felt bad enough about it later that they would call me. So when you're on a jury, if you are convinced, if you have a conviction, if you know in your heart, if you know in your conscience that it would be wrong to convict someone, then you must refuse to find them guilty. Now, there are people, we all know that there truly are people who are insane or just born vicious and mean, and they need to be taken out of society and put away so that they can't hurt people.
One of the four beasts saying,
thank you so much for coming tonight.
Thank you.
We're out of time, but I do want to ask everyone to remember Mama Cook's daughter in their prayers.
Yes.
So we pray for a healing hand there. Hilo, we want to have you back. We'd love
There's
to have you anytime
going
to
wrong,
have a
message. Names.
We'd like to
we'll
convey. Please
too.
Let us know for
who to free and who to blame.
Good night, everybody,
Thank
and
you.
See you next week.
Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around? Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers. 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wigs. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. Till Armageddon, no shalom, no shalom. Then the father hen will call his chickens home. The wise men will bow down before the throne. And at his feet, they'll cast their golden crowns. When the man comes around. Whoever is unjust, let him be unjust still. Whoever is righteous, let him be righteous still. Whoever is filthy, let him be filthy still. Listen to the words long written down. When the man comes around. Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers. 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. In measured 100 weight and penny pound. When the man comes around. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts. And I looked, and behold, a pale horse. And his name that sat on him was Death. And hell followed with him.
What if the armies of the Lord picked up and dusted off their swords, vowed to set the captive free, and not let Satan have one more? What if the church, for heaven's sake, finally stepped up to the plate? If his people prayed, and those who bear his name would only seek his face, yeah, and turn from their wrong ways. And what would happen if we prayed for those raised up to lead the way? Then maybe kids in school could play, unborn children see light of day. What if the light that we pursue came from a hunger for the truth? What if the family turned to Jesus, stopped asking Oprah what to do? What if his people prayed, and those who bear his name would only sing his face, yeah, and turn from their own ways? He said that he would hear his cry.